I'm John Krall. Today, on this special pre-recorded No Limits, we're going to talk about the Indiana Authors Awards and with Indiana writers. My guests are Katie Withers, Development Officer for the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, and Indiana authors Deborah E. Kennedy, Elizabeth Cleffeth, and Azarine Vandervliet Olumi. Because this is a recorded program, we won't be able to take your questions or comments by phone, email, or social media. But we do hope that you will enjoy this conversation with some of Indiana's best young writers. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall. This is a special pre-recorded No Limits, which means that we are not going to be able to take calls, emails, or questions or comments via social media, but we hope you enjoy the conversation. We're going to be talking today about the Indiana Authors Awards and several Indiana writers. My guests are Katie Withers. She is Development Officer of the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, and Indiana authors Deborah E. Kennedy, Elizabeth Cleffeth, and Azarine Vandervliet Olumi. I hope I got all of that right. They are respectively the authors of Tornado Weather, All These Beautiful Strangers, and Call Me Zebra. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we probably ought to start, Katie, by talking about what the Indiana Authors Awards, I know you and I have talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
In the interest of full disclosure, in years past, I was one of the judges for the Authors Awards. What they are, but there are people who join this conversation all the time, and I hate to leave them out.
Of course. Thank you. So the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. And these three ladies that are on the show with us are all finalists in the Emerging Author category. They'll be joining us on October 13th at an award dinner, and we will name the winner at that dinner. So the goal of the award is to promote a love of reading and writing throughout the state of Indiana by honoring the very diverse literary talent that we have here in the state. We do that in two ways. We honor authors in a few categories, national, regional, and emerging. Authors are publicly nominated, and then a panel of literary experts, which at one point included you.
Until I lost my expertise. But, yeah.
Select our winners and finalists after many, many hours of reading. So we honor those authors with a cash prize at a ticketed award dinner. It's a fun event. We give the awards to our honorees. They speak a little bit. We have a silent auction, and we just celebrate the importance of literature all together. And the event is a fundraiser for the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation. But apart from the award, we also do a lot of outreach throughout the year through the award program. We have a day of free activities called Meet an Author, Be an Author that we do with the Indiana Writers Center. And it's exactly what it sounds like. You can come and meet authors from Indiana, or you can come and be an author and take some workshops on writing, publishing, editing, all that good stuff. And then throughout the year, many of our winners and finalists also make school visits and visit public libraries and book clubs as well.
So, and in the interest of even fuller disclosure, I probably ought to say that Deborah was a guest on this show a little more than a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and I was one of the people who nominated her book for the Authors Awards. I've got to say, at that time, I had not read Elizabeth's or Azarine's. I would have nominated them, too. I do not envy the judge's decision this year.
Yeah, they're all fantastic.
Well, and I don't think I've ever seen – I'm going to ask you to speak to the historic – I mean – these are three heavyweight books here.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever seen anything like this in the emerging author category.
Yeah.
In the 10 years of the competition.
I think the talent keeps getting better and better, which is exciting. And I think these three books are all so different from each other, and that's what's been really fun. And to see these kind of books really take off and get a lot of press has been exciting for us as a panel.
So it's got to be as writers, and I'll start with Azarine, but I'd like to get all three of your thoughts on this. It's got to be a little bit weird to be in competition on something like this because, you know, writing is kind of a solitary art and you don't necessarily do it to win prizes at the end. On the other hand, it's also, I would think, a little bit flattering as well. Your thoughts, Azarine?
I'm so sorry. I think I didn't catch everything. What is the question again?
Well, my question really is it's got to be a little bit disconcerting to be in competition with other writers, but also somewhat flattering, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I heard you say that the writing process is quite solitary, and I think, you know, that's true for most of us. Although, you know, I think as a writer who's kind of engaged with other writers and what they're thinking about, you know, writers that are dead and alive, you know, I've always felt as if I'm writing in company. It's just the company is kind of remote, you know. The conversation is sort of happening more in the privacy of my own inner world. And, you know, when the book comes out and you see the press, it is really exciting to finally be able to kind of transmit all of the work you've been doing on your own to the public, to readers, and share it with other writers and to see what kind of happens and where the book takes you. So it's always exciting as a journey. It's exciting to kind of be outside of your own room for a little while.
Elizabeth, how does it feel to be part of a competition?
I mean, I think it's a huge, huge honor. And I think it's exciting to get to engage with other writers and, you know, get to meet them in person and talk about, you know, their books and their ideas and their writing process. So even though it is, you know, a competition, it's also a way of bringing writers together. And I think, like you said, you know, writing being so solitary, I don't get to spend a lot of time with other writers. So I think it's kind of a cool opportunity.
Deborah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think what's so magical, one of the magical parts about writing is the engagement that you have with a reader. You might not ever meet them, but they bring their own brains, their hearts to your writing. And I think one thing about award nominations, I know a lot of people like to downplay them and say they don't matter, but it brings you more readers. And so I think that part of it is thrilling, too. It's just the idea that more people will engage with the work. And, you know, because writing is so solitary and you feel like you're doing it in a vacuum, it's wonderful to have that opportunity to have more people engage with your work and then just meet other writers and get their perspective on things. That's another bonus.
I'm going to stay with Deborah on this one, but bring it back all the way because it's a theme, obviously, in Azarine's book about that community of writers and about the voices speaking through the ages. How important is that idea of a community of writers to you, Deborah?
You said for me, right, John?
Yes, Deborah? Yeah.
How important is the community? It's very important, I think. One of the joys of, I think, you know, we all attended MFA programs, right, or writing programs. One of the joys of that is the community, is engaging with other brains, people kind of also keeping you honest, I think, is a big part of the writing community and keeping you humble. I know I value that a lot, just getting input from other writers, because the problem with writing in solitude is you can get way too much in your own brain, and I think communities kind of help you, engage with the real world more, if that makes sense.
Elizabeth, how important is that community of writers to you?
Very important. I came up through, I got my BFA in creative writing and my MFA, and part of that is going through a lot of creative writing workshops and being part of the workshop environment. So I feel like a huge part of my development as a writer came from being a part of those groups and being sort of molded by the fellow writers who I was in workshop with. So I think that's hugely important to kind of who I became as a writer.
And Azarine, I meant what I said. This is a significant part of your book, Call Me Zebra, about that idea that you are part of this, you know, large living and pasture, part of a chain almost, an ongoing community of writers. So it obviously it's a theme that has great significance to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think that I or anyone else can really write in a kind of intellectual vacuum. And for me, it's really important to acknowledge all the writers that have shaped my thinking and to kind of think alongside them and to kind of push the frontiers of the human imagination further. And to sort of innovate from a place of awareness about, you know, literary history and literary tradition. And I think also just being immersed in a living community of writers, you know, I teach at the University of Notre Dame's MFA program in creative writing, and I see this in our students all the time where they become aware of what their stakes are in their writing projects because they're immersed in this community and getting feedback and having live readers that are responding to their work in the moment.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Authors Awards and talking with the three finalists for the Emerging Author Award in this year's competition. This is a recorded program, which means that we are not able to take calls, emails, or questions or comments via social media, but we hope you're enjoying the conversation. Ezarine, I want to stay with you for a second, and I'm always curious about who people's inspirations are when they write. You drop some clues, obviously, in your book, but who were the people that you first read who said to you, you know, maybe I should do this as well?
I'm sorry, who are the people?
Who are your inspirations as writers?
Oh, for this novel in particular?
Well, in general. Oh, who inspired you to pick up a pen?
There's such a wide range of writers. You know, I grew up in the Middle East and in Europe and in America, so I read writers from all those different cultures and languages. So for this book in particular, I think, you know, Cervantes and Dante and Nietzsche were really important to me, and then sort of very wild, you know, more contemporary writers like Kathy Acker were very inspirational, and thinkers and writers like James Baldwin and W.E.B. Du Bois. So those were the writers I was kind of spending a lot of time with while I was writing this book. You know, my influences range from, you know, Cesar Ayra, who's a Latin American writer, to Borges and Clarice Lispector and Lydia Davis. So it's a kind of a wide, wide range.
Elizabeth, same question to you. Who were your influences or your inspirations?
Sure. I think growing up, I was very much influenced by the classics. I was a huge fan of Louisa May Alcott, Little Women, all of Jane Austen's books. And then more recent and more contemporary, E. Lockhart, Jessica Knoll, Curtis Sittenfield were really huge inspirations for all these beautiful strangers.
And Deborah, I know we talked about this last summer, but a few months have passed since then. Who are your inspirations?
They've probably changed. I don't know. Well, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I think for the most part I tend to gravitate toward writers who write about very seemingly small things, mundane things. One of my big influences is Barbara Pym, a British writer that is considered one of the most underrated writers in England. And I think I just turn to her all the time for just her focus on mundane detail and writing about the lives of people that a lot of times people might just ignore or overlook or think are unimportant, and that's kind of what I'm really being drawn to right now. When I was young, it was Ella Montgomery and Madeline L'Engle, and, you know, those writers. But I think right now what's influencing me are writers who write about kind of unsung lives. That's what I'm interested in.
And, Katie, if people want to hear these three, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so on October 13th at Central Library in downtown Indy, we have a panel discussion with these three emerging author finalists and our national author winner, who is Kimberly Brubaker Bradley, and a regional author winner, Sandy Eisenberg Sasso, and our lifetime achievement honoree, James Alexander Tom. And that is at Central Library at 3 o'clock, and John Kroll is moderating, so you can hear him discuss this and more with them again that time, and it's free.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Authors Awards today on No Limits. This is a special pre-recorded No Limits, which means we're not taking calls or emails or questions or comments via social media, but we hope you're enjoying the conversation. My guests are Katie Withers, who is Development Officer for the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, and Indiana authors Deborah E. Kennedy, Elizabeth Cleffeth, and Azarine Vandervliet Olumi. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. This is a special pre-recorded No Limits, which means we're not going to be able to take calls, emails, or messages via social media. We hope you're enjoying the conversation. We're talking about the Indiana Authors Awards and with the three finalists in the emerging author category this year. My guests are Katie Withers. She's Development Officer, the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, and Indiana authors Deborah E. Kennedy. She's the author of Tornado Weather. Elizabeth Cleffeth, she is the author of All These Beautiful Strangers. And Azarine Vandervliet Olumi, and she is the author of Call Me Zebra. So I asked about influences at the end. This is a dangerous question. Dangerous for the host, not for the guest. In that part of the reason I ask, I frame it as a question, is I've seen too many cases in which a host, in trying to describe a book, actually gives away so much of the book that no one has a reason to read it. Mm-hmm. So instead of doing that, I frame it and ask, I'm going to ask each of you to talk about your books and talk about really where they started, where the impulse started to write the book, and then maybe tell a little bit about the story, but not so much that people don't feel a reason to read it, because each one of these deserves to be read. So I'll start with Azarine, please.
Yeah, sure. I think one of the central questions that really motivated me to write the book were sort of this notion of what is home and what is hearth, and how does someone who's a refugee or an immigrant experience that relationship to home or to place, and then also to love and intimacy when they're no longer kind of connected to their place of origin or their language, their mother tongue. And so the narrator of Call Me Zebra is a young woman who's the last, she's the descendant of a long line of very eccentric Iranian artists and intellectuals, and she's living in New York. And when her father passes away, who's the last relative she has, she decides to retrace the path of their exile and to return to Iran via Catalonia and Barcelona in particular, and Turkey. And so as she goes through this journey, she's also thinking about the history of literature, but also about history itself and about love. There's a very strange love story that's wedded into the book. So that's sort of it in a nutshell.
Did when you were writing it, because it, and I should say, it's not an overtly political book, but we are having these kinds of conversations about belonging in mm-hmm. this country right now. Was that any part of your inspiration, this whole idea of exploring who belongs and who doesn't, and what does it mean to belong?
Yeah, that's always a central question in my life as someone who doesn't really quite belong anywhere. But it really didn't have, I mean, it didn't have and had everything to do with the conversations that are happening now, in the sense that I think for a lot of Americans, that's a central question to how we navigate society in America. And, you know, with the recent elections, that conversation has really come into the sort of into the light more. And for me, the writing process, you know, the book was pretty much finished by the time the elections came around, and I'd been writing it for 7 years. So they were just questions that have been nagging at me since, you know, I've lived here and grown up here. So it's nothing new.
Deborah, how did talk about the genesis, if you would, for your book, and talk a little bit about the story.
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of dovetails well with what Azarine was saying. I had started my book years ago, I think around 2009, and the impetus for it was in my hometown of Fort Wayne, Indiana. A man who owned a laundromat had put out a sign that said "No Burmese welcome" or "No Burmese allowed." Fort Wayne actually has, oddly enough, a large Burmese refugee population. And I saw that sign, and it just inspired me to sit down and write. I wanted to write about community, about, again, belonging, who belongs, who gets to decide who belongs. I changed the emphasis from Burmese refugees to Mexican immigrants because I thought that was a more universal topic and more pressing, perhaps, at least for the country at large. And like I said, I started this in 2009, so it was something that was ongoing. It wasn't necessarily, you know, connected to the election. It just sort of happened that way. So I wanted to write a story about a community, and that there's a large number of characters in my book. It doesn't have one narrator. Each chapter is told from a different point of view, and basically it takes place this summer when a young girl goes missing. She's of Mexican descent, even though she's an American citizen. And it kind of her disappearance alternately divides and unites the community. There's the white population and also an immigrant population that has been brought to the town. It's a fictional town in Indiana. They've been brought to work at a dairy. So there's a lot of dealing just kind of with the racial conflicts, but also just exploring just kind of what makes the fabric of a community. And they're each, like I said, each chapter deals with a different character. And so what I was really intent upon exploring was just what makes a town, who in the town is kind of the main character, I would say.
Elizabeth, same question. What was the genesis of the book? And tell me a little bit about the story.
Sure. So I'm a huge fan of true crime stories. And the sort of inspirational seed for All These Beautiful Strangers came from the HBO docuseries The Jinx, which follows the real estate heir Robert Durst and his wife Kathy goes missing from the family lake house in the early 80s. And she was never found, but he was always sort of implicated in her disappearance as well as in several other murders. So that was kind of the inspiration behind the story. All These Beautiful Strangers follows a 17-year-old girl named Charlie Calloway. She's attending an elite New England boarding school, and she's trying to get into this secret society called the A's at her school. And at the same time, she's sort of very haunted by her family past and the disappearance of her mother, and the story kind of fluctuates between the different points of view of Charlie and her parents, and kind of sort of unravels this mystery of what really happened to her mother, who disappeared when she was very young.
So, and I'll stay with Elizabeth on this, but I'd like to ask, because in each of these stories, in very, very different ways, place really matters. It's almost like it's an additional character driving the story. So I'm going to ask, starting with Elizabeth, how important is place in your writing?
I think it's very, very important. Place is always where I start. And I think in this book particularly, I don't know that it could have taken place anywhere else than, you know, the East Coast and New England. We're dealing with a very privileged, you know, class and boarding schools and things that aren't really found, you know, outside of New England. So I think, you know, for this particular story, that couldn't really have taken place anywhere else. And I also think that setting gives, you know, lends itself to a certain atmosphere that sort of permeates the story. And so for me, I wanted to have something that was, you know, very dark and kind of gothic feeling. And so I feel like it's very important that the story took place where it took place.
Deborah, same question to you. How important is place in your writing?
It's very important to me. I think it might, I identify as a Hoosier writer. It's just kind of where I was born. It's home. It has formed my identity as an artist. And so in my book, I think that place forms these characters as well. It gives them their life circumstances, which for a lot of the characters, their life circumstances feel almost like they can't escape them. That's one of the questions of the book is how much place forms your reality. And so I think I usually start with character. I don't often start with place, but place often sort of determines character, I guess, in my writing.
Ezarine, same question.
Yeah,
how important is place?
Yeah, likewise. I don't really differentiate all that much between character and landscape. I think they're just, you know, part of the same fabric. And I think what's interesting in moving around is just, you know, how like wildly strange and beautiful every place is in its own way, and how, you know, invested I am as a writer in bringing that on alive on the page, so that when, you know, readers encounter a place they've never been to, they feel transported. And it was really fun in Call Me Zebra to write about Iran and northern Iran and the border with Iraq, and then to move into writing about New York City, and then to move into Barcelona, and to sort of allow even the lyricism of the book to kind of just, you know, reflect or mirror the mood or the emotions that I associate with those places. So, yeah, I think it's kind of a central thing in fiction.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with the finalists in the Emerging Author category for the Indiana Authors Awards. This is a recorded No Limits, which means we're not able to take calls, emails, or questions or comments via social media. But we hope you're enjoying the conversation. Ezarine, I'm going to ask all three of you this, but as we've been talking, as I was preparing for this show, a phrase stuck in my head. Many years ago, I studied, when I was in grad school, I studied under a guy named Walter Ong, who was a Jesuit priest and was the former president of the Modern Language Association and a renowned scholar. And one of his phrases was, the writer's audience is always a fiction, which is that one of the first acts of imagination when you sit down to write is thinking about who you might be writing for, that you have to kind of create that. So, Ezra, I'm going to start with you. Who, at least when you sit down to write, who do you see as your audience? Who are you writing for? Or two, as the case may be.
Who am I writing for? I think that it would be really presumptuous of me to even pretend that I could answer that question. I think, you know, I guess I'm just writing for anyone who's asking the same kinds of questions or curious about the same kinds of things, about, you know, this sense of how do we build a relationship with emptiness or with ourselves, or how do we kind of navigate life after trauma or grief? And I think that those questions are really palpable in my work. And even though, you know, it's serious literary fiction, it's still a very basic human question that I think everyone can come to and, you know, sort of like go on that journey with the narrator and see what comes of it. So I don't really think about an audience. I think what I think about is mostly how am I going to work on myself so that I can be the most honest writer while writing about really difficult things.
Is it, I mean, in listening to you, and I may be completely off base, and please tell me if I am, you know, I think Father Ong, if he were listening to that, would argue at almost some level that you're writing for a younger version of yourself, answering questions that have bedeviled you for a long time. Is that plausible?
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, what I hear in that is this idea of like literature as salvation, which I think it can be to some degree.
It's a theme in your book, too.
I'm sorry?
It's a theme in your book, too, that idea of
absolutely,
literature.
Absolutely, yeah. As a kind of, you know, it sort of creates a container for helping us to hold things that are just really painful to touch directly. And I think, you know, the process of writing a book that so much of it is about grief and not belonging, you know, made me mature so I can see that the book was a process I needed to go through as well. And in that way, sure, it's a response or a kind of lifeline to a younger self.
Elizabeth, what audience do you imagine when you first sit down to write? Or do you imagine an audience?
Yeah, I kind of try not to imagine an audience as I'm reading. Primarily I want to write a book that I myself would want to read. And I, you know, like literature, that's escapism. I like to read something that is entertaining and engaging and keeps me, you know, turning the pages. And so, you know, that's my primary drive when I'm writing is this a book that I would want to read? And I kind of try to, you know, not think about audience too much.
Is it a book, though, that, you know, the kind of the young Elizabeth might have wanted to read? Is that what you said?
Yeah, yeah, I'd say that's fair. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Deborah, how about you?
I think I agree with Elizabeth and Nazarene. I don't picture a specific audience. I have to say, I don't actually like to read books that are kind of the way I write. I know that sounds strange, but I write the way I write, and I can't change that. But I tend to like to read books that are different from my style. I usually like to read slow, very atmospheric stories where very little happens. And I'm not saying that my books are full of event or big plot twists or anything. They're not really. But I tend to write differently than I read, and I can't explain that disconnect. I think one of the questions that I'm interested in is just how are we different as humans? I tend to think that we're all the same. There are different circumstances to which we're born, different twists of fate, but I like to explore this idea that as humans, regardless of borders or identity, we want the same things. And I've in conversations with families and friends back home, it's something that I've tried to emphasize with them. So sometimes I guess when I sit down to write, I do imagine some of my family and friends in Indiana where I'm having a dialogue with them, where I'm trying to explain to them that I think in general we're all the same, because I've had some pushback on that idea in my life as a young person. So I might be thinking about that in the back of my mind, but it's definitely more subconscious. Consciously, I'm just trying to write a good story and try to explore just kind of all the different ways there are to be human. So I guess I'm not really picturing anyone in particular.
If you're just joining us, we are talking in this special pre-recorded No Limits with the three finalists in the Emerging Author category of the Indiana Authors Awards, My guests are Katie Withers, Development Officer of the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, and Indiana authors Deborah E. Kennedy, Elizabeth Cleffeth, and Azarine Vandervliet Olumi. Because this is a recorded program, we can't take calls, emails, or questions or comments via social media, but we do hope you're enjoying the conversation. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to this special pre-recorded No Limits. We are talking today about the Indiana Authors Awards and Indiana writers Deborah E. Kennedy, Elizabeth Cleffeth, and Azarine Vandervliet Olumi. They are the authors, respectively, of Tornado Weather, All These Beautiful Strangers, and Call Me Zebra. My guests are Deborah, Elizabeth, and Azarine, and Katie Withers, Development Officer for the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation. Because this is a recorded program, we're not able to take calls, emails, or questions or comments via social media. So, Katie, we've talked about these great books and these great stories. What do these folks get if they win?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the emerging author winner gets a $5,000 cash prize, and then they also get the opportunity to give a $2,500 grant to the public library of their choice, which is a really cool part of the program. And then they get the added publicity of winning the award, and the finalists get added publicity as well.
And again, these events take place on October 13th.
Yes.
There's a dinner and a whole, could you walk people through real quickly what the day is like?
Sure. So on Saturday, October 13th, if you want to be with us all day long, you can get to Central Library at 10 in the morning, and we have activities happening all day from 10 to 5 for free at Meet an Author, Be an Author, where you can meet more than 40 local Indiana authors. We're going to have several of our past winners back presenting workshops, so that's a great opportunity as well to meet them. You can take workshops on anything from writing to publishing to editing to marketing yourself on social media. So that's from 10 to 5 that day. And then that evening, there is a ticketed award dinner. There are still some tickets and table sponsorships left. Tickets are $75 a piece, and then we also have a special book club rate. But at the dinner, they'll be able to hear from all of our winners this year. And we also have some special musical and theater performances. And then everybody that comes to the dinner walks away with a copy of one of these fabulous books by our winners and finalists.
And this is the 10th year for the
competition. This is the 10th year, yes. And through the award dinner, we've raised more than $700,000 for the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation.
So that you give some sense of, you know, the kind of company that these writers are keeping. Who are some of the previous winners?
Some of the previous winners. Well, John Green is probably the name that I think just a few people listening will recognize.
Yeah, he actually broke the computer system here at WFYI.
Yes, I remember that. I think I was here that day.
Yeah.
So he won in 2012 the national prize, but we've also had past winners like James Alexander Tom, Barb Shoup, Scott Russell Sander. Let's see. Oh, I could go on and on and on. Mari Evans, Dan Wakefield, all kinds of people from all over the state.
So, Deborah, what's it like stepping out into company like that?
What's it like stepping out into company like this?
Yeah, like some of those names.
Oh, wow. Well, you said before, I mean, flattering, right? I mean, but it's just so exciting. I think that another wonderful part about being a nominee for an award like this is that you get to add to your community. So, you know, now I know Elizabeth, I know Azarine, I might not know them if it weren't for something like this. And so I'm looking forward to the dinner, too, just an opportunity to meet others in the community. And I think, you know, as we mentioned before, like how you can feel like writing solitary, that you're in a vacuum. It's just you and your desk and your computer. And then finally you get to be around all these great minds and great creators. And I think that's really wonderful. It's a privilege.
Elizabeth, what's it like being linked with Dan Wakefield and Mari Evans?
Yeah, I mean, it's just an incredible, incredible honor, you know, to be linked to authors, you know, like John Green, who you grow up reading and just have huge admiration for, and then to meet other, you know, up-and-coming contemporary writers. I mean, it's just, yeah, kind of a dream come true.
probably ought to explain the context of saying that John Green broke the computer system here. I don't want people thinking that he is a vandal or
he's
anything
secretly
like that.
He's a computer hacker. Yeah.
That actually what he did was he tweeted he was going to be on the show right before we went on the air. And all of a sudden we were getting calls and emails from Israel and Japan and all over.
Wow.
It was sort of like, the Beatles and Elvis had decided to come back and do a concert together in our studio, which was a remarkable thing. Can you talk a little bit, Elizabeth, about how getting a distinction like this? I mean, Katie alluded to the fact that, you know, that there's a reputation effect. What getting a recognition like this means in terms of helping you sell books or advance your career? How important is that for a young writer?
I think it's incredibly important, especially for debut authors like myself. I think half the battle of being an author is the promotion side and, getting the word out about your book and people, knowing about it so they can read it. So I think opportunities like this, really help to kind of spread the word and allow more people to know about your book and access your book. So I think, that's incredibly important.
Deborah, how helpful is something like this?
Oh, I agree with Elizabeth. I am really bad at self-promotion. I think a lot of writers are. I don't think it's necessarily in our wheelhouse. It's not what we dream about or think about when we sit down to write is this, our readings and things we need to do to get the word out. And so something like this really helps. It kind of puts you on third base because otherwise it's difficult. I think it's kind of like music these days where a lot of promotion for a writer is kind of DIY, right? So when you're nominated for an award, then it's something that kind of takes that off your plate, and that's really wonderful. And then just because, like you said before, with the company that we're in, I think a lot of readers will see that and pick up our books because, we're part of that group now, and so that's really great too.
We started this conversation by talking about the fact that it's often solitary work, that it's just you and either the blank page or the blank screen, and you've got to fill it up. But you've both kind of alluded to the fact that you've got to promote your work now, that's one of the expectations for an author. I'm going to ask what the best experience has been doing that, and then the second part, so you can anticipate it, is what's the worst? I published a book many, many years ago, and the nightmare I remember mm-hmm. is doing a book signing over in Terre Haute in a mall where they decided that actually they would, instead of having the table out inside the store, they would put it out kind of in the concourse to try to draw people in. The result of it was I spent, 2 hours or however long I was there answering questions about where the cooking section was, where the restrooms were. It was, rather than being uplifting, it was an exercise in ritual humiliation. So let's start with the best part and then what the worst experience was. And I'll start with Deborah on that one.
Well, I think the best part is meeting face-to-face people who have engaged with your book in a meaningful way. I think a lot of us don't start out, we don't obviously have an audience that we're thinking about, we don't think about, oh, someone's going to read this and love this. I don't think we think about that. I shouldn't speak for anyone. I just want to tell a good story. And so then readings give you a chance to interact with people who consider themselves your fans, and that too is a privilege. It's wonderful to talk to people who get what you were trying to do. That can be really heartening, I think. And then you need that heartening moment for when you have to sign books for two people and then tell people where the bathroom is. I think that can be really discouraging to go to a reading and have no one come, really. But then at the same time, you know, quality over quantity, I think. One of my best readings was one of my most poorly attended because I wasn't nervous. I just engaged with the few people that showed up because I thought, well, they really care. So that's pretty great. And it's wonderful just to have an audience at all. And again, it's not why I do it anyway. I just want to tell a story. And so then if people do show up, one person, that's pretty great to be able to reach someone. So it keeps you humble. It gives you perspective. It reminds you, I think, of why you do it in the first place.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, so I'm brand new to all of this. My book just came out in July, but I got to go over tour in Dublin and London with Melissa Albert, who's a big YA author. Her book, The Hazelwood, has been on the bestseller list for, you know, most of the year. So, I mean, that was amazing. It was great to get to meet readers. It was great to meet other authors, especially ones who are much further along in their careers than I am, and get to talk to them about the writing process and all of that. So that was extremely cool. I feel like the only nightmare part was I had to do these little like pre-scripted videos for the Penguin platform website, and I was just really terrible at them. You had to like memorize something and then look into the camera and say it, and I was just really bad at it. But yeah, I mean, overall, it was a really like positive, amazing experience.
Are both of you at all, because you know, you've each said you don't really sit down and write, you know, with an audience in mind or even to some degree an expectation. Are you surprised that you found the kinds of audiences and gotten the kind of response that you have? Elizabeth.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, kind of coming up in the MSA world and starting out by writing short stories and submitting to, you know, literary magazines, you face a really like a lot of rejection. So you're used to hearing no a lot. So I think, you know, just to get an agent, just to get a publisher and have your book out in the world is just the most amazing feeling. And to, you know, have people actually read it, I think, it's all been definitely a surprise, but a good one.
Deborah.
Yes. Or I should just say, no, I knew from the beginning that, no. It is. I think, one of my favorite things to get are emails, from readers from my website. And, I love that because it's so random. I have now a friend in Panama. She picked up my book in Texas, and now we correspond regularly. And I have a friend in Utah and a friend in Colorado, and now they're mutual friends on Twitter. That, I think, is really great. It's just kind of an individual connection that I'm making with people with my book that I didn't anticipate happening. And that's pretty great. And then, of course, I'll get the emails on my website, too, that from my website, people saying, you know, you got this thing wrong about birds, or you got this thing wrong about, I don't know, something really random. And that's pretty fun, too, even though, you know, it's humbling and they're correcting you. I don't know. It's great just to engage with people from all over the country and sometimes the world. You know, that I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, an old editor of mine said when someone would spot a mistake or something like that.
I'm sorry?
At least an old editor of mine once said when, you know, someone had sent something about a piece I had written that spotted a mistake and said, at least you know that they're reading you closely.
They care.
That they really care, that they're paying attention when they're, when they're reading you. So, Katie, 10 years into the Authors Awards, did the people who set this up anticipate that it was going to be something this big, this long-lasting?
I'd like to think that they didn't. I don't actually know, but I think the ripple effects have been really cool. You know, our goal at the library is just to create a community of enthusiastic, capable readers. And what we found with this award program is that these personal connections with authors is one of the best ways to do that. If you meet the author of the person that created this book that you like, that's a great way to engage in the reading process. And it's been very cool to see the relationships we've formed with authors all across the state. I will be honest that before I started managing this program, I had no idea that we had so many Indian authors. I think we knew we had, you know, like Kurt Vonnegut and James Whitcomb Riley, and that was it. So that's been really cool. But also the way that we've been able to engage with public libraries across the state, you know, we've given through this award program more than $70,000 to them. And then that creates its own kind of ripple effects with the money that they're able to provide for their communities. So it's been powerful.
In what ways do you think it has transformed the state and the literary community here the most?
I think it's created connections that weren't there before. Both, I see it kind of, and you can maybe back me up on this a little bit, with the panel. It's made up of literary experts from across the state. Some are, you know, professors, some are bookstore owners, some are librarians, some are teachers. And the relationships that they form, and then, you know, they maybe do a program together, a college and a bookstore, and to watch those kinds of effects just from the panel process alone has been cool. But also, I think it's created a pretty tight-knit literary community here in Indiana. These winners, they stay in contact with each other. The finalists stay in contact with each other. And so that's been really cool to see.
So we've only got about a minute and a half left, Deborah and Elizabeth. I'll ask the question that every writer dreads. Is there another book in the works for each of you, and when? I'll start with Elizabeth first.
Yes, I am working on another standalone book at the moment, but it's still very much in the early development stages.
Deborah, how about you?
Yeah, I'm working on a novel about the earthquake that's supposed to hit out here. I actually live in the Portland, Oregon area, so there's supposed to be a big earthquake that's going to kill us all. And I'm working on a novel that's set in the near future when that happens, about two sisters trying to reunite after that disaster.
Okay.
I'll
look forward to that. Yeah. So we're going to go dystopian here at the end. Real quickly, again, Katie, if people want to attend, how do they go about doing
it? They can go to www.indianaauthorsaward.org. You can find out information about the free daytime public programs and also the ticketed award dinner that evening, and also read more about these finalists that we've been talking to today and the other winners.
And I should say that we have not been ignoring Azarine here. She had to leave the conversation to go teach a class.
She teaches at Notre Dame,
to go teach a class. But we are at the end of our time. I would like to thank my guests, Katie Withers, Deborah E. Kennedy, Elizabeth Cleffeth, and Azarine Vandervliet Olumi for what's been a fabulous conversation. I also would like to wish Deborah, Elizabeth, and Azarine the best of luck with the competition. They are three great books. Everyone should go out, buy them, and read them.
Or check them out at your local
library. I still like to buy books myself. So, and thank you. Thank you all. You have been listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.